Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 101 of Wheat All About It, the world's only podcast dedicated to informing Northwest farmers, landlords, agribusiness employees, university researchers, and the public about the economic, agronomic, political, and sociological issues impacting our favorite crop. Before we get into this week's fascinating episode with Washington State University agricultural economist Randy Fortenberry, I want to remind you that this podcast is sponsored by the Washington Grain Commission. The commission, made up of farmers, industry representatives, and a state appointee, is charged with helping guide the future of the wheat industry by wisely spending the money collected on each bushel of grain produced in Washington. Speaking of which, Randy Fortenberry's position is part of a $2 million endowment created by the Grain Commission to support his research and outreach. Many listening now have heard Fortenberry speak before. I interviewed him at his university office in episodes 79 and 80, earlier episodes that can be found by going to summaries at the bottom of the Washington Grain Commission webpage at wagrains.org. I was only planning on devoting a single podcast to Fortenberry's remarks from the Washington State Crop Improvement Association meeting, which occurred November 12, 2018. Silly me. To think I could jam the best parts of an hour-long Fortenberry presentation into 20 minutes. Will I never learn. Fortenberry was hired to fill the Thomas B. Mick Endowed Chair in Agricultural Economics at WSU for a reason. The guy is a font of opinions based on facts, and the horseshoe mustache he grows each winter gives him an iconoclastic appearance that reminds me of another cherished ag economist, Barry Flinchbaugh, with his omnipresent cigar. In the podcast ahead, entitled WSU's Randy Fortenberry Paints a Troubling Economic Picture in Hopeful Colors, you'll hear the agricultural economist's fascinating, entertaining, and potentially lucrative presentation. Lucrative if selling wheat is on your mind. Fortenberry uses a lot of slides during his presentations, and while you don't need to see them to understand what he's talking about, I'm putting a large selection on the Washington Grain Commission's Facebook page. This is a podcast I'm hoping gets lots of word of mouth, not to mention social media shares. Please direct farmers and landlords who haven't listened to the podcast before to this two-parter from Fortenberry's Washington State Crop Improvement Association annual meeting. There's real value here. Fortenberry began his presentation with his conclusions for the coming year, which include a mixed bag of optimism and pessimism.
The first thing I'll tell you is just the conclusions, in case you want to get up and leave. We're a little bit better off, as most people know, than we were a year ago. I actually think next year will be an improvement on this year. So by next year, I mean the marketing year that starts with the 2019 harvest, so June 1st of 2019 going forward. But I will also tell you that there are some strong headwinds that we need to be a little concerned about. And what that means to me this year right now is this. If I have a 2018 crop I haven't priced, I think it's probably time to do it. Even though we've had a nice big pop in today's market, when you see those, that's probably a time to sell, because I think over the next 2 or 3 months, it's going to be hard to sustain a rally going forward. But then I do think going out a little bit further, there's still some room for some improvement. So I certainly wouldn't be getting too excited yet, even though there's a nice spread between 2019 prices and 2018 prices, about pricing 2019 yet. If I have a 2018 crop I haven't priced, I think it's probably time to do it. Even though we've had a nice big pop in today's market, when you see those, that's probably a time to sell, because I think over the next 2 or 3 months, it's going to be hard to sustain a rally going forward. But then I do think going out a little bit further, there's still some room for some improvement. So I certainly wouldn't be getting too excited yet, even though there's a nice spread between 2019 prices and 2018 prices, about pricing 2019 yet. So I'm going to kind of start where I usually do, which is looking at the USDA balance sheet information. So this just got updated the 9th, was that, Thursday last week, so a little less than a week ago. And here's what amazed me about this. So I usually spend a lot of time trying to defend USDA, not because they're right, but because they're no more wrong than most other people. and because I actually think they try to objectively get the numbers right, even though any kind of forecast is going to have an error. But this report last week kind of really surprised me because they did a bunch of changes in the overall balance sheet. They reduced how much wheat we're bringing in from last year. So that would be what we had left over on June 1st of 2018 as we went into this year's harvest. They lowered yield a little bit. They actually increased seed use this year. So that's what they think we're going to plant this year. So they're effectively calling for more wheat acres. That might all be okay. But what shocked me is they made no change to the export number. And even a year ago, before trade became the issue it is now, we started to have friction with some of our trade partners, USDA was overly optimistic last year about exports. And it was almost that exact same number. And what I'm going to tell you, and I'll show you why I think this in a little bit, but this year, I think they're really overly optimistic, and I think there's very little chance we'll hit that number. That's a price negative event. And that's why right now, I think, if you're sitting on wheat, it's a good time to think about selling most of it now. Things could improve, and maybe they will. And there's a lot of focus in the press about the Australian crop, the Russian crop, other people having some production problems. And all of those are true, too, but the market has priced a lot of that in. It didn't just happen yesterday. And we brought a lot of wheat into this year from most potential exporting customers, countries, which means when we look out, if they have a production problem this year, it'll eventually show up in the price, but it may not be in the next 3 or 4 months, especially if we continue to struggle to export at all because of geopolitical issues that are going on all over the world right now. So that was a real surprise. But even though they lowered a lot of things, lowered total supply, they didn't really change the price. So USDA at this time of year gives us a price range. They're saying $4.90 a bushel to $5.30. That's the average price across all producers and all classes of wheat in the U.S. That'll be the average from June 1st of 2018 through May 31st of 2019, which means we're about 45% through that marketing year. So a lot of the prices that will be used to calculate that average have already happened. Usually, in the October and November reports, I think there's only maybe two out of the last 11 or 12 years where this didn't happen, the final price ends up being in that range somewhere. So this is the time of year where I start to tell producers, if you're kind of at the top end of that price or above it, that's probably a sales opportunity, because even though something could happen to take us even higher, the downside risk is elevated relative to if you were at a lower price. If you're down, cautious and a little more patient will pay off because there's maybe more upside potential given everything we know today and the history that the price usually ends up in that range by the time we get to the end of the year. Well, right now, we're well above that price. So that's another signal to me that maybe sales for the 2018 harvest, if you haven't sold it, kind of makes sense as we go forward. This would be the highest price we've had in 5 years if the current forecasts hold up. If we look at all wheat stocks, though, on June 1st, this is how much wheat we had coming in, and a lot of it was owned by farmers. So as we looked at the June 1 stocks, what's left over from last year coming into this marketing year, there was still a lot of farmer-owned wheat, which means they brought it into this kind of unstable or uncertain trade environment, hoping to get better prices. If you did that, now's the time to sell it again, like I said. If we look at the September 1 stocks report, this is September of 2017. So this year, this would be total production and carry-in supply. This year, we're a little over 3 billion bushels total carry-in. But our September 1 stocks number is up 5% relative to a year ago. And a lot of that is due to a lack of export movement over the summer relative to a year ago. Even though we're expecting total exports this year should be higher than a year ago. So we're lagging. Interestingly, 28% increase in farmer-owned wheat on September 1st of this year relative to a year ago. So that entire increase is farmers holding wheat off the market in their own bins, hoping to see some price improvement as we go forward. Commercial storage, how much grain elevators hold and are owning, is actually down slightly on September 1st relative to a year ago. So there seems to be some optimism among farmers about higher prices, while the commercial side's saying, I'm going to be a little more cautious, and I'm not holding higher inventories now than I did a year ago. So let's talk about the demand for U.S. wheat. Here's the total production. Remember, total supply is a little bigger than that. It's about, that's the total supply. Here's the export number of 1025. That number is 47% of that one. This is why exports matter. Almost half of all the wheat that gets consumed out of the U.S. market is going to the export market. If that becomes suspect, that's a price negative situation. In fact, here's another way to look at it. This goes back, I always forget what I have down here, 10 years. So you can see it's been as high as almost 55%. It's been below 40%. But 47 is kind of the average. So right now we're projecting, USDA is, sort of the average amount of wheat taken out of the U.S. market and sent overseas relative to the total consumption that we're going to experience. Okay? But you can also notice, this is a little disturbing, over the last 10 years it's kind of been trending down. So, which means one of two things has to happen. To maintain a higher price expectation, this decline has to be offset by an increase in domestic consumption, or maybe we have a large reduction in production, so there's total supply is smaller than it would have been otherwise, and then a decline in exports can still not be too price negative. But generally, if you see one of your demand centers declining, you want to hope another one is increasing to sort of maintain the same price relationship to total production and supply that you would have had in previous years. Here's my concern. Now all the negative stuff. We are nowhere near the number in terms of cumulative exports. How much wheat have we exported so far? This is cumulative, which means it starts June 1st in the marketing year, and it goes up through last week. This is 2 years ago when we exported about 1.05 billion bushels. That was a pretty good year. This is last year when we thought originally exports would be up here, and they ended up well under a billion bushels. This is this year so far. This line needs to match the blue line to hit USDA's actual forecast. It needs to hit the red line to hit last year's actual exports. And we're nowhere near either one of those. And here's the problem. We can catch up sometimes. So we can get behind a little bit, catch up later. But we're 45% through the market, maybe more than that. On December 1st, the marketing year will be half over. Okay, so the likelihood, and if you go back and look at exports in the U.S. over the last 20 years, the likelihood that we make all of this up in the second half of the year is quite low in a normal year. And you know what? It's not a normal year. Couple reasons. We're 34% behind, 37% behind where we were a year ago, exporting to Mexico, our largest wheat buyer last year. Now, the good news might be that the president has negotiated the USMCA. I always want to say YMCA when I think of this thing. The U.S., Mexican, Canadian, all-inclusive, whatever the hell that thing is, agreement. But the problem is it's got to be ratified by Congress. McConnell has decided, or at least he announced last week, he was not going to bring the trade bill to the Senate until after the first of the year because they have a whole bunch of other stuff they have to do before the winter recess. The House obviously is completely flipped. They can be seated as early as January 3rd. So if this bill comes up to Congress after the first of the year, it's not clear to me that it will pass the way it might have would have passed in the current Congress because the House, either for political or ideological or even economic reasons, might not want to give the president a win. Okay, and this is the renegotiation of NAFTA. The president, conversely, has threatened that if it doesn't get passed, he's pulling us out of NAFTA anyway. That is not positive for exports of wheat. Let me tell you what I think's happened so far with the trade situation. So I might remember on March 1st, it was announced we're going to have tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. And it was justified under it's called Section 201. It's a national security issue. The idea is if we don't produce enough aluminum and steel ourselves and we get embargoed by somebody or we have a conflict, then we can't build tanks and airplanes and all the things we might need to defend ourselves as well as just support the domestic industry for everything from bicycles to automobiles for domestic consumers. So we're going to impose the tariffs. Now, things got really dicey because on March 1st, we announced tariffs. On March 8th, we decide to exempt Canada and Mexico because they've agreed to renegotiate NAFTA So our olive branch is, okay, then we'll delay, at least for a while, these tariffs. That's one-third of our imports. 2 weeks later, we exempted the EU, Australia, South Korea, Brazil, one other country. They were another third. So all of a sudden, 3 weeks into this, the tariffs are only going to impact one-third of our steel and aluminum imports. There was some pushback because how can that possibly be protecting national security if most of the imports are going to be exempt? On June 30th, the imports were exempt again. Now, here's why I bring this up. This is U.S. steel stock returns. March 1st was the announcement of the tariffs. At that time, U.S. steel stock was way outperforming the S&P 500, the broader index of stock market performance. Now, if investors truly believed that this tariff was going to increase the market position, make U.S. steel more competitive and more stable, you would think they'd buy stock and the stock price would go up. That hasn't happened. In fact, here's March 1. You see this little tick? This is where we came in and gave a bunch of exemptions. There was a rush on steel purchases, which raised the steel price, and U.S. steel's stock price reacted to that. But by June 1st, when we announced that everybody was who had an exemption was now not exempt, so tariffs for everybody, Mexico, Canada, the EU, Brazil, not Brazil, actually, they were exempt, but all the large importers, then the steel price just collapsed. And the reason I match it relative to here is because we know October, and today, was a pretty bad day in the equities market anyway, so everything was kind of going down, but U.S. steel performed much less positively than the rest of the market. Now, that doesn't mean that things won't turn around if, in fact, we put enough pressure on these countries and they change their behavior in a way that induces us to lift the tariffs. But in the short run, what's really happening is we have an industry we're trying to protect who, at least from an investor's perspective, isn't viewed as being protected, and we're paying a cost on the ag side as a result. This is Chinese wheat exports. This is 2016-17, 2017-18, on a weekly basis. When China imposed countervailing duties, it was on agricultural products primarily, including wheat. They only buy 5% of our wheat. But this year, here's June 1st of 2018 to 19, they bought absolutely nothing. For white wheat, this is actually really disappointing because last year, 2017 to 18, they had increased white wheat purchases by like 2.5 times what they had done the year before, over 300,000 metric tons. The year before, it was like 162. And that partly was a result of grain commissions in the Pacific Northwest lobbying hard to get their product into China to be blended with other wheat products and to go into Chinese consumer goods. So we'd spent money and effort and had some success, and now all of a sudden that's zero. Nothing's gone to China out of Portland either. No wheat exports at all. Now that's bad enough, that's 5%. Tariffs went into effect on July 6th. But what's even worse is 37% off to Mexico, because that was our biggest customer. And so it's hard for me to see how, halfway through the marketing year, even if we eliminated all this tomorrow, we get back to USDA's export number. It won't pick up that fast. One thing about wheat, it's not like soybeans where you can go to Brazil or the U.S., maybe Argentina. With wheat, there's dozens of suppliers. So when people renegotiate a supply chain to replace us, even if the prices come back down, you get rid of the tariffs, everything's equal again, it's not like they have to come back to us to purchase if they're satisfied with their new supplier. That's the risk we face in the wheat market going forward, and that's why I'm not as optimistic over the next 3 or 4 months about prices as I am when I look out a little more than a year or so. This is how China used to buy wheat from us. This isn't white wheat. This is all wheat. We get in here during the harvest season. Prices tend to be lowest during harvest season. That's a good time as a buyer to come to the market. And China would export, this is weekly basis, this wheat. And this is a percent of our total exports. So there's that 5% I talked about. Generally, purchases would go up. We'd get into the winter. Purchases would tend to go down. And before last year, as we came back into the spring, purchases would go up again. Here's where the debate started happening and the argument about tariffs and Chinese purchases went flat. And then once they were imposed in the summer, July 2nd, They went non-existent. No wheat's gone to China from the U.S. since then. But it's complicated beyond that because the tariff affects the price. The price plus a tax. But if your currency becomes stronger at the same time, meaning it takes more foreign currency to buy a U.S. dollar, that also increases the price to a foreign consumer. And what's been happening coincidentally is, and maybe not a coincidence because it started at the same time, the value of the Chinese currency relative to the U.S. dollar has gone down over 10%. Or the other way to say that is, the dollar is 10% more expensive. So even without the tariff, U.S. wheat prices would have gone up 10% for any domestic U.S. price. If the price is $5, it's $5.50 in China, plus transportation, all that. But the flat price is $5.50. And then you add the tariff on top of that, and suddenly we become not competitive in the international market relative to some of our export competitors. What happens with an economy when we try to think of a laser beam policy instrument to fix something, we often forget about sort of the secondary effects. And an economy is incredibly complicated, and despite whether you like this or not, we are very globally integrated, and when you push on one piece, there ends up being a response in the other piece, and it might be a change in exchange rates, for example. The solution so far has been we're going to have some compensation for producers to offset the loss of market opportunity from tariffs. Originally, $12 billion was allocated, but right now we're going to only use half of that. About $4.7 billion, that says 4.4, it's really $4.7 billion, but only about $119 million of that to wheat producers. Okay, remember that we're down 37% on exports to Mexico, 5% to China. We're down other places too. Those are the big ones. As a result of this, then, though, we're going to make some payments. The problem is the calculation that USDA came up with is 14 cents a bushel for wheat farmers. The biggest payment is going to soybean guys. Out of that $4.7 billion, they're getting $3.7. But China is their biggest market. If you're a sorghum producer in Kansas, you've lost everything because 87% of your exports go to China and 65% of your crop gets exported, and they're buying no sorghum whatsoever either. The tariff on sorghum is 179% now when it leaves the U.S. It's going nowhere. So we're better off than some people, but nobody's real well off. And the $12 billion probably isn't going to be enough to compensate anybody for what the damage is if it lasts much longer than a few more months. The calculation of damage is based on how much you harvested this summer, and you get it on half of that. So the calculated damage estimate of 14 cents, you're really only getting 7 cents because you only get paid on half of your production. But the thing is, as I pointed out before, farmers had brought in a whole bunch of last year's wheat that they owned in storage. None of that's available for compensation. So we're really only compensating for about 40% of the inventories that farmers held as we went into this tariff situation, at least in the case of wheat. You might get the other 7 cents eventually. What Secretary Perdue and whoever advises him decided was, we're only going to use half the money initially, because if we can solve this thing sooner than later, then maybe we get the market sales back that we thought we were going to lose, and we don't have to make payments for the second half of the marketing year. That's not going to happen, in my opinion, so there probably will be a second payment. But he's also said very clearly that he's only going to look at compensation for the 2018 crop. 2019 is off the board. So if this extends much beyond this year, there won't be future compensation for market loss to exports. And the real thing is, I mean, everybody would be better. Well, I should be careful how I say this. If you assume that the metal markets don't eventually see some significant benefit from this, everybody would have been better off just to keep the market opportunities to begin with, because what we would have earned would be much greater than the $12 billion we may get, and certainly more than the $4.7 billion we're going to get now. So let's think about world wheat. This should have been price positive. This was the first. So this is world production, world consumption. This is for this marketing year. These are the ending stocks. This was going to be the first year in a number of years where consumption was going to be higher than production. We're finally going to start eating into those excessive world stocks we've been building up for 8 or 10 years. Okay? That's still likely to happen, especially given the current production problems in a couple parts of the world. The problem is, this would be price positive if you could enter into the world market, but if you're being cut out a positive part of it, it may not translate into a positive price for U.S. producers, at least in the short run. Longer term, if this continues, even with tariffs and strong currencies, we'll be able to sell more wheat. But in this particular marketing year, I think that's going to be a challenge, which is why I'm saying if you have anything left from last summer, it's probably a good time to go ahead and sell it. But don't get too excited about selling next year's yet, because maybe some of this gets worked out as we go forward.
Don't forget to visit the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page to see Fortenberry in action and to view some of the slides he talked about during his presentation. If you thought this episode with Fortenberry was interesting, just wait until next week when he talks more about world wheat inventory, trade disputes, and U.S. market share of the future. Please join me for the second part of WSU's Randy Fortenberry Paints a Troubling Economic Picture in Hopeful Colors 2 on the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.